Welcome to the Mock Stars Podcast. I am Menace, one of your hosts, and I just woke up, and we've got Flash.
What's up?
He's in the building, everybody. Welcome
I'm
to the
I'm in the building, as
yes.
they say.
Is he here with me? Is he with us right now? Welcome to the show, everybody. This is the Mock Stars Podcast, If You Nasty, the number one show on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper, the 23 crisp flavors, the nectar of the gods. I was in the airport waiting to pick up my mother, who's visiting me this week, and I went to the vending machine, and they only had dog water there. They had Pib Extra.
What is Pib Extra?
You don't know what Pib
is? It's like a knockoff Dr. Pepper or a knockoff root beer?
It's a knockoff Dr. Pepper for sure. It's Mr. Pib, but extra? I'm not sure what the extra is for or why they marked it.
So that guy
doesn't
even have his doctorate.
No. Yeah, no surgeon.
He's just like a civilian. He's not like an expert. He's probably not even certified in anything.
No, he's just a mister. Mr. Pib.
Mr. Pib, you know what? Mr. Pib probably isn't even proficient in Microsoft Office.
You know what? To be honest, I still have trouble, but I'm not making soda and hawking it at the airport. So, yeah, you're right. You're right. Shame. Shame on Mr. Pib.
Pib's out there grinding. You know, he's just trying to make a living. I respect that.
You know,
But Dr. Pepper is an expert, respected in his field, a surgeon master general.
Exactly.
Legendary human. But Mr. Pib's not a bad guy. We're not saying that Mr. Pib's a bad guy.
He's not.
We're just saying he doesn't compare to Dr. Pepper.
Yes, correct. You might not be you can be a bad guy without being a bad guy. You know, we learned that from Wreck-It Ralph, of course.
We learned so much from Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah.
Let's not narrow it down.
It covers a lot of subjects throughout the course of the film. I just, you know, Candy Cane Lane, all that, lessons.
Is Don Cheadle in Wreck-It Ralph? He's got to be.
I'm going to look at the IMDb and see if he is in it. Or actually just Google, is Don Cheadle in Wreck-It Ralph?
Hey, viewers, if sound off in the comments if Don Cheadle's in Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, it doesn't, like, the Google's not telling us, but we trust you, the viewers, to actually give us the inside track on this one.
Like, he has to be. You're telling me Algae Rhythm from Space Jam 2 is not in Wreck-It Ralph?
Oh, man, you're so right.
Is Wreck-It Ralph in Space Jam 2?
No. It's not a WB entity.
Okay.
Yeah, a Warner Brothers entity. Everything that was ever owned by Warner Brothers was in Space Jam 2, though. And that includes the Iron Giant. All right.
The whirring of gears in his mouth,
yep,
as we say.
Exactly. All the tiny little bones in his face, even though he's a robot. No bones. All right.
Someone say that gears are the bones of the robot body. Now, I'm not a doctor. I'm not Dr. Pepper. That's not like a professional medical opinion. But I think, in my opinion, as a layman, as like a regular guy like Mr. Pib, that gears are the bones of the robot body.
I'm on board with this. A new catchphrase for the Mock Stars Podcast,
which is about Magic the Gathering
and Dr. Pepper. If you would like to support the show, you can find us on YouTube, where you can subscribe, like, and ring that bell for more notifications. We are just over 420 subscribers. We eclipsed it. We lost the mark, 423.
Nice.
Now at the time of recording, I imagine we'll be many, many more subscribers by the time this episode drops. You can also support us on Patreon by becoming an official Pepperhead. For $3 a month, you can support the show. You can also support the show by becoming a Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead for $5 a month. And you can also support the show like our 2 liter supporters, Definitely Jeremy and Pool Boy Barry, who gain early access to our other line of videos, which for all the general viewers out there will get the first look at our Card of the Week line of videos releasing to the public this week. They will be able to see my thoughts unfurled on Food Chain, whereas our lovely 2 liter supporters have already been able to see it for about a week now. So
we've also got Revenlift hanging out in the Mock Stars Dr. Pepper Lounge collecting those hats. Keep on that road, my guy. Almost there to the exclusive one-of-one bucket.
This week, our card of the week, I haven't even pulled it up, is Mirror Maid.
The card I'm thinking of is a blue enchantment.
Absolutely.
Enchantment, and it copies target enchantment or artifact on the battlefield.
Yes, sir.
It's for 3 mana.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It's almost like you have it in front of you.
I don't actually.
That's a good memory.
That was from my memory palace.
Nice. Yeah, Mirror Maid. I was pleasantly surprised. And today's main subject, what we'll be talking about, is a reflection on the tournament that I just played called the Justin Invitational. It was one of our supporters, Tordeth, his last tournament in the Pacific Northwest. And man, was it quite the show. And Mirror Maid had quite the impact. Not something I was expecting, but it was. There were a few cards over the course of the day that really did shock me. Like, there was one stifle moment that and I'll talk about it in our fourth round, completely saved the game. And
a well-played stifle. That's what that card is for. It's just surprising that it happened in real life.
Yeah, it was like a turn 3 or turn 4 Atraxa that came down, and the ETB effect was on the stack, and the guy was sitting on one land. he goes stifle, and he said nothing the whole game.
Boy,
yeah, it was a beautiful moment, but I will talk about that later on. Mirror Maid made an appearance that was genuinely shocking, and if you want to hear our thoughts unfurled on Mirror Maid, you can subscribe at the 2 liter tier for $10 a month, get early access to that, support the show, and gain 2 entries into each of our bi-weekly giveaways. That is another thing that you gain by supporting us at the Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead tier, is you gain an entry into this week's giveaway, which is a copy of the Helga deck, which I just top 16'd with at this tournament.
Now, we talked about this deck on the podcast.
We did. We have a previous episode about it as well. Yeah. I'm slowly falling in love with the deck.
Okay.
It's out of all the feedback I got over the course of the final or these last 2 weeks as I was brewing this baby up. If you know, you guys are listening for the first time, you were at the tournament and you heard about Helga, or you are unsure of what Helga does. It's a green, white, blue Bant. So Bant Frog Druid that whenever you cast a creature spell with mana value 4 or greater, you draw a card, gain 1 life, and put a +1/+1 counter on Helga Skittish Seer. So and then you can tap it for X mana of any one color, where X is Helga's power, and then spend this mana, only cast creature spells with mana value 4 or greater, or creature spells with X in their mana cost. So it seems quite limiting, but there are a lot of different cards and strategies that work alongside it that make for quite an interesting brew. So I took this deck to tournament, but we were mostly there to celebrate Justin and celebrate all the things that he, you know, what he means to the community, what he's done for the community, his Kobe Bryant mentality. You know, he's sort of the he's got that Mamba mentality where he's like, we should be grinding to get better, We should be grinding to win. And this team, which he's always had that like team mentality too, is just like, I want this team to be freaking strong, man. Like every day that we're here, we're working to get better. So, yeah, he's been a huge, a really great fixture in the PNW CDH scene. We wish him the best of luck as he moves out to Ohio and continues to take his Nya guy gon' do attitude out there, because, man, the first round. So as we get into this tournament, we all get, you know, into our first rounds, and we're still sitting there shuffling. Like, our table hasn't quite mulliganed to start the game. And all of a sudden, there is an uproar at the second table. And everyone's like, what is going on? And it's Justin. And he's like flexing. And he's like, let's go. You know, he won his game in 90 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah. With Rocco, Cabaretti Caterer. So
love to see it.
Yeah, he's definitely a Nye guy, and he's gonna do. So
what was the line of play?
Oh man, I'm not sure off the top of the dome. But his opening hand was a Llanowar Elf, a Food Chain, two lands, and I think there was a Creature Tutor in there or something like that to basically get Squee to the top super quick and then land that. Basically, he Llanowar Elfed, cast a Food Chain. It must have had an additional mana in hand, but exiled the elf after casting a Food Chain to cast a Squee, and then boop, game over.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So super quick, super unassuming start, which probably led to people like not setting themselves up to be able to interact, like, or you know, leaving mana open, or it's also,
yeah, they saw a Nya deck in whatever seat he was in, and they were like, well, we don't need to hold up interaction right now.
Yeah, I imagine he was in seat one or two.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was crazy. Turn, you know, like round one. Yeah, just like his tournament, his invitational, 90 seconds, boom, win. it was
shown him why it was named after him.
Yep. It was super epic. But I sat at my first round table, and I was in seat four, barf, super sucky, but, it was against Gitrog Monster, Lumra, which was very interesting. I've pulled up a deck list. I want to show you guys that. And then I can't quite remember. Oh, it was Blue Farm. So, yeah, the first round, Blue Farm, Lumra, and Gitrog Monster, and then me. I was in seat four. Blue Farm was in seat one. So clearly at a disadvantage with a Bant deck that is completely a Rube Goldberg machine of, and you know, the deck I like to build. And I got off to a decent start, and it was just so I turn one a Draenith, but I'm on seat four. So land, Chromox, drop a Draenith. And that was like, I was like, I'm in seat four. I need to slow the game down because there are three other very, very, very commander centric decks right here. You know, like Blue Farm needs to generate advantage through cards, through Timna, and then Lumra. I don't know what the deck does, you know, like yet. So I was like, I need to make sure that doesn't land. And then I know Gitrog, as soon as it hits, the game is likely to end.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my line of play right away. It's why I kept the hand that I did. I went down to six. And so I developed a board state like by turn four. But the other decks were also doing a lot. Blue Farm was doing nothing. Sorry, Blue Farm player.
That is surprising.
They couldn't get Timna out, and that was their entire plan. And then Lumra dropped a Collector Oof on them on like turn two or three. So all the rocks that they were using to generate any type of mana, and they got stuck on two lands, was just, yeah. They were stuck in the mud. And then Gitrog So what happened was I dropped the Dranith, and then Blue Farm was getting greedy and was like, I really need my commander to start getting cards. So they flood mod the Dranith back to my hand, and so they could drop Timna, and that was all they did with their turn. And then it goes to the Lumra player, and instead of casting Lumra, they scape shifted and then generated a ton of mana off of Lotus or off of Anissa. And then when Elvish Reclaimer came down and all this stuff, really threatening board state, Field of the Dead, and then all of a sudden there's like eight zombies on the board. And then Gitrog drops Gitrog hits the battlefield, and then we're using all of our interaction trying to stop a win attempt by the Gitrog player. So comes back around to me, I attempt to drop the Dranith again, and it gets countered. I'm like, no, you wasted your flood mod, and then we have to burn all of our interaction trying to stop the Gitrog, and then the Dranith gets countered, and then I already have Helga on the battlefield, and I cast Ancestral Statue, which is a new addition to the deck list. If you haven't seen this card before, Ancestral Statue is a 4-mana colorless combo machine in Legacy, but it's when it enters the battlefield, return a non-land permanent you control to its owner's hand. So with Helga, it's a 4-mana creature that triggers the ability of drawing a card, gaining a life, and putting a +1/+1 counter on Helga. Now, it goes infinite with Intruder Alarm. So, Intruder Alarm is whenever a creature enters the battlefield, untap all creatures, including your opponents. So, creatures do not untap during the untap step, which is also pretty important, right? So, with those two and Helga on the battlefield, you draw your entire library. And so that's why I included that combo. It's basically a food chain for this very specific deck. So I cast that. Nobody knows that it interacts with Intruder Alarm in that way, but they see it come down. I draw a card, gain a life, put a counter on her, and then I bounce it back to my hand. And I'm like, this is a value engine for me. Round one went to Lumra. It was after they scape shifted and generated all these zombies, we were spending so much time worrying about Gitrog that, and I knew this and I was talking about it at the table, was just like, once we stop Gitrog, we die to Lumra. Like, I'm sorry, you're the second closest. Sorry to cast a spotlight on you, but we need to like avert our attention here. Once the Gitrog's under control, look, everyone needs to be looking here, including Gitrog. But, no, they just generated a ton of zombies with their land return package. You know, if you're unfamiliar with Lumra and what it does, it is 4/2 green, a legendary creature elemental bear from Bloomburrow, nonetheless. All of the craziness that came out of Bloomburrow in CDH. It's insane. But it's a Vigilance Reach. Lumra has power and toughness equal to the number of lands you control. And then when it enters, mill 4 cards, then return all lands from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. Pretty good. I think it's a pretty good ability right off the bat. Mm-hmm. It's value, generates a ton of value. You have, obviously, there were a lot of, like, it was cracking fetches here and there, and then using cards like Aftermath Analyst, which is basically the same ability. There's a lot of redundancy in this with...
Oh, okay. I've never heard of that card.
Really? Yeah.
What set is it from?
It's from Murders at Karlov Manor.
Oh, that explains it.
Yeah. A relatively unknown set. But for 1 and a green, it's an elf detective, so it's sort of like... You can elf ball in this deck if you wanted to, but the list that we're looking at on YouTube does not elf ball list. It's not an elf ball list. But Aftermath Analyst is, 1 and a green when it enters, mill 3 cards, and then you can pay 3 and a green to sacrifice the analyst, return all lands from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. So it's like this Sylvan Reclamation, is that what that's called?
I don't know the card you're talking about, but that sounds like the name of a card that would do that.
That does.
We can agree on that much.
We can indeed, but it does the same thing as that 4-mana sorcery, but it's on a body. So it's a little bit, it's a little bit more of an investment. You get the mill off of it. And this was a huge card in Standard. It was like part of this Teemer Storm deck with Up the Beanstalk and all this crazy.
Oh yes. The Up the Beanstalk era.
Yes. Still very healthy, that Beanstalk in Standard. But, yeah, this deck just kept generating value through like Elvish Reclaimer, returning lands from the graveyard or sacrificing them to get different effects, like Talon Gates of Madara, which was super annoying because they kept phasing out creatures like it was once every turn cycle, but it was, you know, still that's enough to like disrupt the board state. So that's how we kept Gitrog Monster at bay. Was, you know, it was like, all right, instant speed, I'll activate this and then I'll return Talon Gates and phase the Gitrog Monster out and keep the game alive. So pretty cool deck, like really a lot of really cool interactions. It's also a food chain.
Have you seen other Lumra decks? Was this out there, or is just this is a rogue pilot?
This is a rogue pilot, man. Like, okay. This isn't even the list that we're looking at on YouTube is not, I do not believe it's the guy who I was playing with, but he is currently a pilot in the Pacific Northwest that believes very much that Lumra can succeed, and he did. Like he continued to. I think he won 2 or 3 games out of 4 rounds of Swiss. So I know he won at least 2. Yeah, it came down to it, and the other two. So Gitrog basically sacrificed everything and killed themselves to try to get to jam the win, and they got punished for it by all the zombies, and then. Blue Farm, I convinced the Blue Farm player to kill themselves on a Final Fortune.
Okay.
Yeah. They were like, well, I'm dead to Gitrog. And I knew at that point that Gitrog was just going to die to zombies. They weren't going to get another turn. And so I said, well, if you don't do the Final Fortune now, he showed me his hand. Like, when are you going to do it? So he killed himself with the Final Fortune. Really wasn't able to do much with it.
What did he do with the extra turn? Nothing?
Nothing. Yeah, he was under a collector roof. And so, he tried to bounce it with the Chain of Vapor and do some things, but just didn't have the right sequence of cards. And then, yeah, goes to Lumra. Lumra kills Gitrog. Gitrog doesn't get a turn. Comes to me. I'm still dirtling because of the ancestral, they interacted with my ancestral statue line that, you know, and so I got knocked out there. I was just praying for a top deck. And I got knocked out by 20 something zombies.
Okay.
Yep. It was a good like first game. Get my feet wet. It was cool. Mm-hmm. Love the deck. I'm excited to see where Lumra goes. I'm going to pay more attention to it now that I know what it can do. And I still don't
think. Do you think what lost you that game is just like not knowing what, just knowing that Lumra was going to be a threat, but not knowing where to stick your finger?
I think. It was that I just didn't have the ability. It operates in a way that doesn't create many windows to like stick your finger in. Cause if I had the interaction to stick my finger in when the scape shift went off, I would have, but I didn't. That would be the one spell that if I were to look back on the game, that's where I would have chosen to interact because they got to pull so many more lands out of the library and they had like redundancy through their deck to like return lands from the graveyard to the battlefield. So, you know, in mass, and that was, yeah, like I would say that was the point of interaction that would have completely derailed them.
Mm-hmm.
But, now that I've seen it, I'm definitely like looking at it like it's, I have to give it the respect it deserves. Yeah. At the end of the day, like every deck that sits at the table, you never know, I guess, like when
obviously someone was confident enough to build it and bring it to the tournament, right?
Yeah. Give it a shot. My second round. Yeah. This is where I ran into Talion And Glarb was also in my second round. And for whatever reason, I'm spacing on who the third deck was. It was Ghost Fire Slice Kyle. Ghost Fire Slice Kyle. From That's a Good Card, another YouTube channel.
Yeah,
he was at the tournament, and we both got shout-outs before everything. But super good dude. He's a huge Buffalo Bills fan, and they had the game on, so he was a little distracted throughout the course of the game. But he was playing Korvold, and there was a bounty on him when going into the game, or going into the tournament. They said, if you can Ghost Fire Slice Kyle's Korvold, Justin will buy you a pack of any cards you want.
Okay.
So apparently this is a growing thing, because I got an invitation to their Discord server, and there is a channel that is called Kill Kyle with a Ghost Fire Slice. Or Kill Kyle from That's a Good Card with Ghost Fire Slice. So there's a hole in it. I was like, oh, what's this, like five comments on this channel or whatever? And it's like, no, they've been talking about this for months. When is someone going to claim this bounty? And it happened in the first game in the tournament. So or first round, that someone finally killed Kyle, or killed. Basically, he tried to jam a win with the Witherbloom Apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
And someone Ghostfire sliced the Witherbloom Apprentice, and that was enough to kill him because he had nothing going forward. So they considered that claiming the bounty, and the legend of Ghostfire Slice continues in the Pacific Northwest.
So it's still a live bounty, though. People can still pursue this.
Yes, to kill him specifically with a Ghostfire Slice, that has not been done yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but... They're all playing Ghostfire Slice in all of their red decks, and it's not because it's a good card, and it is not a bad card, but they're doing it because of the bounty more than anything.
Fair enough. Hey, listen, it's a sign of success to be out there with the bounty on your head, having haters coming for you.
Mm-hmm. No bounties on my head, though.
Yet.
Not yet, correct. I have to create a legend with this.
Kill Menace with a Rube Goldberg machine of your own design.
It's too vague.
It needs kill Menace with a 6-card combo.
Oh, that's
off meta 6-card combo.
Off meta 6-card combo. Do it. Yeah, I need dominoes to be falling and marbles to be rolling in order for it to truly count. But yeah, second round was a lot of fun. It was a great game with Kyle, and the Italian player didn't end up getting to do a whole lot. And then Kyle came through, didn't get to do a whole lot with Korvold, because he ended up mulliganing down to 4. And we ended up tying this game, and then across from me, who did I say? It was 3 other decks. I can't remember. God, my memory is just awful this early in the morning. But the deck then started to perform. Helga really started. I started seeing where I needed to grow, and where I needed to what lines I needed to pursue, what sort of hand I needed to start keeping. This game actually taught me a lot. I turn one'd a Heliod Suncrowned off of exiling an elvish spirit guide into a soul ring, and then played a land, and then went into Heliod, and then I was able to turn two into Helga, and then cast a creature with mana value 4 or greater on the following turn. And then once I showed this line that whenever I cast something, I gain a life, Heliod triggers, I put a counter on something, I got that trigger and I targeted Helga with it, and it would have given her 2 counters instead of 1. They immediately phased Helga out in response to that trigger. So they did not like that. And, so then I became this, it was like, that is dangerous. And, if we let it go for multiple rounds, then this is just going to get out of control. You know, like the amount of mana that I would have been generating would have been insane. So, yeah, it was. They phased me out there, and then when Helga came back, they swordsed her and put me off my track pretty hard. And then in this game, what I did was I ran into a Phyrexian Metamorph where I, and this is something that I learned, and this is important for all of you CDH players, for all you Magic players out there, I learned what a detrimental or beneficial missed trigger is. Have you ever heard of that before? Have you ever, is that, those sequence of words ever touched your ears?
It's sounds vaguely familiar. What is the, is it like, explain it.
So this particular sequence, I was battling a wandering archaic on the field that had landed early, and I ran it. I had a Phyrexian Metamorph, which was the creature I was trying to attempt to cast. That first cast was a Phyrexian Metamorph to copy this wandering archaic. So with that on the stack, they delayed it, right? So it goes into exile with three time counters on it. And I was like, I put it in exile, that's fine, or whatever. And it comes around, and it gets to the end of my turn, and the second turn, I miss the delay trigger to remove a time counter, or the suspend trigger. And at the end of my turn, I go, oh yeah, this is it too now. And they go, that's actually a missed trigger. You have to acknowledge it before you can, you know, if you're going to do it. And I was like, well, with things like suspend, you know, like this is like, obviously I understand, and I'm more than happy to, or like, I'm fine doing that. I was just more than curious. So I asked the question. I was just like, is it not like a mandatory effect to remove a time counter? And otherwise, wouldn't people just forget to remove time counters as it benefits them?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they were like, that is curious, you know, like, maybe it is worth looking into. So we called a judge, and then the judge was like, we got mixed signals from people all over the room, because this was like, ended up turning into a pretty big discussion. But yeah, it was ruled as a detrimental missed trigger. And then I was like, well, what if it was a piece of removal? Right? What if it was a piece of removal and I was just forgetting my triggers because it didn't benefit me to cast it in that, like, on that turn, right? That I played mm-hmm. dumb. Then it would be a beneficial missed trigger to me. And then, well, then it would totally disrupt the way the game would happen. I'm always one for if someone has a Rhystic Study and a spell is cast, and this is another thing that pissed me off all day, and this is something I do not want to see when I go out and play, and this is a behavior that if you're listening to this and you do this and you're fine with it, whatever. I'm not judging you for it or whatever, but it really pissed me off all day is that when someone had a Rhystic Study or a Smothering Tithe and someone would draw a card or cast a spell, they would say what they were, you know, like, they would say, like, you know, for the Smothering Tithe, be like, and I then draw a card, not say anything, and not acknowledge the trigger, and try to make the opponent miss that trigger. It's an enchantment that for me, it is part of the game. And if I am your opponent and you have a Smothering Tithe and someone draws a card, I'm going to remind you. I'm going to say, hey, Smothering Tithe trigger, did you want to pay? And if I forget my own, I hope someone would do the same for me. Like, and the same for Rhystic Study triggers. Like, cast a spell, no one acknowledges it unless that player says, are you going to pay one or whatever? This is like, and it was just like, after missing this suspend trigger, I was just more aware, obviously, of like wanting to make sure that the sequencing of the game is correct and that things are happening the way they should. And then when a Smothering Tithe comes down, I feel like everybody should be aware of when a card is drawn, there's a trigger on the stack for that. And that Well, it just felt like people were trying to move through the game really quickly at times to get people to forget their triggers or, does that make sense? And that's what frustrated me.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, guys, we know the Ristic study's there. Just acknowledge it. Hello.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we've talked about it before. Like it benefits you to control the pace of the game, like slow the game down.
Yeah. And I also have opinions on that. We're, you know, 40 minutes in the episode and it was, you know, like game two, that all happened. It actually went to a draw. So not a lot. I just learned a lot about like how the deck should be sequenced. Go to game three and I actually got to play with Justin, which was awesome. So got to play against Rocco and it was Rocco, Rog'Sai, and it was Zuladok. It was the colorless Eldrazi Zuladok.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was such a crazy, crazy deck because you see the Candelabra come down and you're like, what is going on here? And so Dranith came down. Their whole deck is all about cascading. So they were definitely like very incentivized to get rid of that. And it was a great game. But so I dropped the Dranith and I start going through the pace of things and I'm generating mana pretty rapidly at this point because I turn two goes around. I just set up a little more and then turn three, I dropped the Grand Arbiter. So I had Dranith and Grand Arbiter down and I was like, good luck, Rog'Sai. And then we saw the Curse Totem drop from Zuladok and then it comes around to me and I'm like, I'm playing some dumb cards in here, and Null Drifter is one of those dumb cards. And I was like, so what happens with, it's a Torpor Orb. It wasn't a curse, it was Torpor Orb. So what happens when you evoke something with Torpor Orb, right? You cast a spell for its evoke cost. If you do, it's sacrificed when it enters the battlefield. So it's an enter the battlefield trigger. And that does not trigger with Torpor Orb. So for three mana, I cast a 4/4 flying Annihilator 1 that drew me three cards. It was awesome. And the Rog'Sai player had tried to jam a Necropotence, and then they paid like 27 life into this Necropotence because what Justin did, which was very clever, was he put once... they landed the Necropotence. The next moment of opportunity, he hit it with a Biseiju. So before he actually saw any additional cards from it, he had to make a decision on how many cards are you going to want to see. And so he spent, like 27 life going into it. And then we all bopped him with the creatures and put him down to, I think, put him down to three life. And now I have a 4/4 Annihilator 1 flying creature that he can't defend against. And this is another thing that I regret, and I will now, and this is what's awesome about tournaments is how much you learn, is I will never allow a player to win, I will never allow a player to live if their only argument is that you need to keep me alive to interact with the table. Never again. Because what happened was they sat there and they presented their argument and they were like, look, I have interaction. I have plenty of cards in the graveyard. Like I can, you know, like continue to interact with the table in a meaningful way. And I'm Rog'Sai. I should have known better when they presented Rog'Sai as their commander, that they were a heathen. You know, that they were a dirty liar, because what ended up happening was I was like, I passed on the combat, didn't kill him because we needed to, you know, like it was in hopes to like interact with the table in a meaningful way that would allow me to create a window. But as it goes to Justin, he can't do anything through the Grand Arbiter and the Dranith. So he passes and then. Rog'Sai removes the Dranith and tries to jam a win attempt right there. And I'm like, you dirty rat. And so we're now sitting there burning all of our interaction. And this isn't like a turn. This isn't like jamming a win. These are all 90 minutes, full stop. No extra turns, no extra time type games. Heat burns 20 minutes of the game trying to jam a win attempt, thinking through his lines. 20 minutes. And I'm like, my God, pass your fucking turn. Like, you're burning time to give other players opportunity. And this is like a strategy, right? Because when you're on 90 minutes time, you know you can't win. You try to jam a win attempt, think through your lines, slow play it through. So regardless of what you say, guy out there who was playing Rog'Sai at this tournament, I like that was slow play. And it was intentional to draw the game out, which took away an opportunity for anybody at the table to get a win, because the game ended up coming to a draw. And it was, I had such a good setup.
Like, was it not slow play enough to call a judge?
No, it wasn't like sitting there going like, or anything. He was actively playing cards, but he was tutoring a lot. And so like, I don't know what to look for. And then, you know, like resolving a demonic consultation, you know, looking for a specific card, and you see Brain Freeze and Thassa's Oracle go away, and you're like, okay, what is he gonna do now? And just keep spinning the wheels, Wishclaw Talisman, you know? And then you're like, all right, and I'll tutor this. I don't know who to give it to. And you know, there's a conversation of like, well, I'll do this for you, you know, I'll do this, you know, like whatever, to get the Wishclaw Talisman. So and then he goes and tutors, and then he's like continues to play cards and continues to do things and fill the graveyard up and lands an Underworld Breach. And then, you know, and then you're still interacting with it, but it's, you know, he's still playing cards and attempting to win, even though his win cons are exiled or have been exiled with a demonic consultation. So still taking game actions, but in a way that was not meaningful, you know?
Okay.
Like, it wasn't actually moving towards winning the game, because there was nothing
you could point to a judge and say, hey.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know,
but you could see the cards that were gone from the deck and what lines of play he was pursuing, and just knew there was nothing left to do.
Yeah. Connor was the Zuladok player, and you know, I had a conversation with him after the game, and we were just saying, you know what, next time just fucking kill him. And like, if you're ever in that situation again, just fucking kill him, shut his mouth, make him leave the table. Because it's like, Connor's an excellent player, but we both talked about him. We're like, we sacrificed our opportunity to win the game by allowing him to live thinking he could interact with the table because of that 20 minute turn, which took all the time left in the game, which gave nobody another chance. So it was, yeah, it was pretty upsetting. Overall, you live and you learn, right? That's what the tournaments are for. But the deck performed really well in this one. This is where I was just like, with all the time that we did have and all the turns that I did take, I was really just, I think I was a food chain away from winning the game, which sounds like, oh, of course you were. Right, but
oh, you mean the core card of your deck's combo? Or just that card away from winning?
No, I exiled a Mist Hollow Griffin to force a will to interact with the table. So I was like, I am set up. I've got the Grand Arbiter still down. Like, it's gonna be really hard, you know, like for people to interact with me moving forward. So, I was set up really well because I had shut Justin down from playing Rocco right there, because he had shown us that he had food chain in hand as well, but since the Grand Arbiter was there, it would do nothing. Round four goes in. I'm at 0-2-1. I can't remember how the numbers go, but I'm at 1 loss, 2 draws, and goes into the final game, and Marcus from CEDH comes down and he sits next to me, and I was like, yeah, come watch, see what a baller does over here. Like, let me flex a little bit. Marcus is watching. And I mulligan down to 4. I get absolutely the worst hands.
Well, you brought that on yourself.
Absolutely, because I was saying that shit out loud. I was like, Marcus is watching me. Let's go. So, yeah, goes in the fourth round, and at this point, I know what I'm looking for. So I have to mulligan out of bad situations that I normally would take, and or like that I would have taken with less experience. So go down to four, which is like it was like two lands, a Chrome Mox, and a Kinnan. And I was like, well, at least I'll be able to like play the Kinnan with whatever, you know, like hopefully I draw something and I can play the Kinnan, mm-hmm. right? Or it was land, Worldly Tutor, Chrome Mox, Kinnan is what I kept. And the land was green white. It was like Savannah. And so I drew a Rhystic Study, and I was like, oh, I can play Rhystic Study on my next turn. If I do this, if I play my land, I exile Worldly Tutor to Chrome Mox, and then I cast Kinnan, and I go to tap the mana, and I say it out loud. I was like, and I'll cast Kinnan. No, I won't. I don't have any blue mana. And then I pass my turn. Yep.
Yeah.
Big idiot, you know? But so I go to draw my next card, not a land. Go draw my next card, not a land. No blue sources. Draw next card, not a land. It's a birthing ritual. I guess I'll play it. Boom. And then so for like four turns, five turns, six turns, I'm stuck on two lands. And this is that game I was telling you about with the stifle that came into play that saved us all. Because on turn four when Atraxa, so it was me, Atraxa, Azami, the mono blue commander that says you can tap wizards to draw cards.
Yeah, haven't you built that? I feel like a couple years ago you built that real casually.
Yeah, it was I was under the impression that whenever commander said draw a card, they'd be good. And
sometimes it's true.
Sometimes it's true. The player was very experienced with the deck and just knew where to like grow. Like had some really strange pieces in there, but it all worked out. It all worked really well together. We didn't get to see much of it, as I'll explain. But then I can never remember the player to my right. Yes, it was a Scion of the Ur-Dragon deck. So it was, yeah, Atraxa, Azami, Scion of the Ur-Dragon, and Helga. And I'm in seat two in this scenario. So, have an awful turn one, probably turn six before I actually dropped a Kinnan. I played a Birthing Ritual, and then I played a Sarah Sanctum because I was like, oh, finally I'll get mana. Yeah. And then I get Culling Ritual right after that. As soon as I play the Birthing Ritual and I tap my Sarah Sanctum for mana, I get Culling Ritual the next turn. So my Chrome Mox, my Birthing Ritual are gone. I'm down to a Savannah and a Sarah Sanctum that taps for nothing. And it was just a really disgusting situation. The stifle thing happens and the whole table is like going crazy. Basically, me and this Azami player are dirtling. We both have two lands. Mine do nothing. His are islands. And he can't generate enough mana to even consider, you know, moving forward. So it's just a one-on-one between Ur-Dragon and Atraxa, who are just battling, like stopping win attempts and like pushing each other back and forth. And the sign, or and then the Atraxa player drops a Smothering Tithe. And this is why I think Mirror Maid deserves to be card of the week, is because then the Azami player actually drew a land and played a Mirror Maid and targeted the Smothering Tithe. And then all of a sudden had 20 freaking treasures in the matter of like a blink of an eye.
Yeah, it really opens up some lines of play, right?
Yeah.
I mean, 20 mana on the board.
Yeah, and then I started thinking, like, Mirror Maid is being played in this list. I've seen it twice today, and there's a high rate of enchantments being played, not a high density, but the enchantments that are being played are significantly impact the game significantly. So it is worthwhile to play Mirror Maid in the same way that it is worthwhile to play Phyrexian Metamorph. You're actually...
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. It's that versatility that might make the difference, because copy enchantment is good. Copy artifact is good.
Yep.
Maybe a card that does both of those things for one more mana is also good.
Yeah, and then it was someone recommended that I play Clever Impersonator in the Helga deck, because it goes onto the stack as a creature, but it enters as any non-land permanent. So I'm considering it, but regardless, what ended up happening in this game is that Mirror Maid came down, created a ton of treasures for this mono blue player to now continue interacting with the table. On that same turn, they played the Mirror Maid. Before they generate all the treasures, it comes back around to me. I finally get a blue source. I play the Kinnan, and then I'm able to tap for additional mana. I ended up landing an Enduring Vitality as well. And then it goes around the table one more time. And I play a land. I play another creature. And then I just... Oh, it was a Seedborn Muse. And I have to fight. I have to fight like hell to get the Seedborn Muse to land. It was a huge stack. It was... they went to Force a Will it. And I force negationed it and costing cards out of my hand, stuff like that. And all the cards that I've been picking up over the course of turns that I was doing nothing. And so finally the Seaborn Muse lands, and that is the last turn I get. Because we're starting to get close to time. So this deck is essentially the Rocky Balboa, where it takes punches, it can handle the punches, it can interact, and then it when it goes for the win, it's just, you know, a little too late, especially when you get the time, right? So you have to manage your time incredibly well when these games are 90-minute cutoff flat. So I think I love that decision. I'm never going to argue that. I think that doing that versus going to turns is better overall, because we weren't there till 10 p.m., we were there till 7 p.m. And, you know, like that's because we decided to hang out afterwards. We were playing a game beyond the championship round, which, spoiler alert, Atlas won the whole tournament.
Oh, well,
hey,
that's a familiar name.
Hey, if you didn't know it, Atlas also has been climbing the ranks. He's the number 3 player in the world right now.
Oh, last time we mentioned it, he was like number 12, right?
15.
15, yeah.
Yep. Number
look at that.
Number three player in the world. Yep.
Still on Kenrith?
Yep, still on Kenrith. And when I went to check out, after I finished my fourth game, I finished a fun game. I went over and I went to check out what was happening at the final table. And it was Atlas with like 12 non-land permanents. And I was just like, this game's over, guys. You've lost. Like, and they're like, no, we still have a shot. Like, no, you don't. No, trust me, you don't. But yeah, so this final game, I ended up drawing way more cards after finally landing the Rhystic Study. I dropped a Seedborn Muse, and then we're battling for it on the stack. The Seedborn Muse lands, it goes to the Atraxa player's turn. They present a flesh duplicate on their Atraxa. And then I go, you know what? I'm just going to spin the Kinnan. I'm spinning the Kinnan right now. So I tap to act with Enduring Vitality, which the card is crazy. It will forever live in my green decks. Enduring Vitality will go in every Menace green deck that includes enchantments forever. Maybe just every Menace green deck from moving forward.
Yeah, it's permanently part of the enchantment package.
Yeah. It's nuts. It really is nuts. I saw it do a lot for a lot of people. And every time I brought it up, people were like, the card's cracked. It's really good. So, I was able to tap all my creatures for additional mana due to Enduring Vitality. And the combination with Kinnan was nice. And so I spin the wheel and I go and I find a stunt double. And so I put the stunt double on the battlefield as a copy of Atraxa. I look at 10 cards. I put 10 more cards, including like Solitude, and I had drawn a Drannith earlier and stuff like that. So I put a ton of interaction in my hand, and then I start looking at it. And I have a High Fae Trickster, so ton of mana available because my creatures flash in the High Fae Trickster, and then we just start going through the sequence. This is like a this ends up being like a 30-minute turn. Because Ristic studies are out, Smothering Tides are out. A lot of things are happening on the stack. I'm drawing a lot of cards. High Fate Trickster's out. I'm able to flash things out. I don't go for Helga here because I actually see a line without it. And so I'm picking up a ton of cards. I'm pursuing my line now at instant speed, but everybody's interacting with it. And it was just one of the craziest turns of my life where I'm trying, and I can now understand what people feel like when they win on other people's turns. I could never do that with Naya, but as soon as you add blue to the mix, I can do it. I'm that guy.
Get to be that guy.
Yeah. So, I pursued the win a couple times, drew a ton of cards, and then ultimately it came down to running out of gas and then just trying to survive to the end of the turn because the Atraxa player still had plenty of gas in the tank. So finally they got to a point where they ran out of gas and we all just shook hands, ended up being a draw. So, we played 22 minutes past time because this one turn had not resolved yet. So, from a game that started where for the first 6 or 7 turns, it was just two decks battling and then one stifle, opened the game up or at least slowed the game down enough for us to start drawing cards, developing a board state. And then we started threatening the win attempt. When, the Ur-Dragon player was presenting double Niv-Mizzet. So the new Niv-Mizzet, by the way, was seeing quite a bit of play. There was someone playing it as their commander. And then this Ur-Dragon decklist had put it in there, as a way to win the game. So
what is the text on the new Niv-Mizzet from Jumpstart, right?
It's from, Foundations.
Not Jumpstart. Foundations, yeah.
Yeah. Here, let me see.
But so, it still goes infinite with curiosity, right? That's the line there.
No, it's whenever a source you control deals non-combat damage to an opponent, you draw that many cards. So
okay.
What happens is you turn the Ur-Dragon into, Niv-Mizzet Perun or into this, and you have one of the other pieces. And then you draw a card or someone casts a spell, draw a trigger on the stack, turn Ur-Dragon into this or whatever. And then they see each other and then they machine gun the table to death.
Got it. Yep.
So, I saw this come down. I was also looking at some really interesting lines of play from the guy who was playing it as his commander. So I didn't know how viable this would be, but, it turns out it's an incredible drawing. It's like an engine. So I'm excited to see where it goes. It also plays Gutshot, one of my favorite cards of all time. Cause it's okay.
You know what? The new Niv-Mizzet might be a future card of the week.
Yeah.
It's something to keep an eye on.
For sure. Yeah. Definitely worth breaking down, talking about it a little more in depth. But the tournament overall, like I said, closed up. Atlas walked away with another victory, nonchalantly, of course. But one thing I did notice, he was rocking a Mockstars can cap the entire time.
Oh, shit. Was he drinking Dr. Pepper?
He's drinking Monster because he's a monster.
Okay. Got it. That's fair.
Yep.
By the way, I don't think I've talked about this on air. When I was driving across the country last month, I got a Monster, Monster makes hard bevs, like a malted bev.
Yes. Yeah. Funny
like
enough.
Like a 6% alcohol Monster. Yeah. What were you going to say?
I was funny enough is, my mother who's visiting me, I was talking to her. I was like these guys, they drink Monster all the time and stuff like that. She's like, I drink Monster. And I was like, what? You're in your 60s. And she's like, yeah, I drink the Monster beers. And I was like, they make beer now?
They make beer?
Like the malted beverage,
Okay.
Yeah.
I have to disagree with your mom politely. They are not. My wife was like, I can smell it through your pores like the next day.
Yeah. So are they tasty?
No, it I don't know. Like, it tastes like Monster Energy.
Okay.
Which is a taste.
That is a flavor. I'm not one for energy drinks, but I will and exclusively drink energy drinks at MagicCon when I'm in Vegas. That is like the only time I will like.
What about MagicCon Chicago?
I'm gonna do my best to have a lot of natural Dr. Pepper energy.
Okay.
Yeah. Which, you know, I'm excited. I have yet to buy my plane ticket, but I'm looking at hotels now. And yeah, I'm excited for next month.
Yeah, just quaffing some classic Chicago Dr. Pepper and Malort cocktails.
Jesus.
I don't know if that's a real cocktail, but put some Malort and some Dr. Pepper, see what happens.
You put the greatest beverage of all time, mix it with the worst beverage of all time.
Mm-hmm.
See what happens. See what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be mediocre beverage. But then you'd be disgracing.
Could be a new strat.
Could be disgracing the doc, man. But yeah, regardless, we'll be at MagicCon Chicago playing games, jamming, reconnecting with other friends and stuff like that. If we have met you, seen you at MagicCon, go to MagicCon Chicago. We'll see you there. Yeah, I don't really have any like closing thoughts outside of if you are within killing range at a tournament, I will kill you. I will now kill you.
Yeah, I think it's best to just clean up the table.
If you are like, I will continue to keep the game alive. No, fuck you. Like, I'm sorry. Like, but leave. I need you to leave.
Especially if it's hard 90-minute rounds.
Exactly.
Like, person's just going to be breathing your air, like, and they're not going to contribute anything to the state of the game, just get rid of them.
Yeah, yes, that is the thing, is that if you, moving forward, I feel like CDH in general is taking that structure and moving forward with it. They, you know, it is proving to be like, yep, if you get to 90 minutes, we're not here to waste our time, because turns, if it goes to turns, you can have 20-minute turns. Like, the game has gotten to that point most of the time.
Well, then also, turns is a mini game.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's its own subset of the game, and it becomes, like, a different strategy and all that sort of stuff. And, like, I don't think it's a deterministic of who is the most skilled or, like, deserving of the points for the win player.
Yeah, so I think that moving forward, yeah, it's just like time is the way to do it. And if someone else is soaking up your time and is within killing range, you just kill them. Like, knock them out and just move forward with your life. You're going to get more turns and you're going to get more time with less players at the table. So kill them. And then what was the other thing? Mirror Maid is excellent. Is our card of the week. We'll be expanding on that and having a little bit of discussion beyond this. And then peace out, Justin. Nye guy gonna do. Like I said, he's just been...
Watch out, Chicago. Or watch out, Ohio.
Yeah. Ohio, you got a demon headed your way. A Nye guy gonna do demon. And he's...
just gonna dominate the CDH scene in Ohio.
Yeah, probably. Probably. He's that good.
Can't go to Columbus. Can't go to Cincinnati. Nowhere to run.
Yeah, he was also at the final table. So that was like, he was sitting there battling Atlas like he always does. It was just such a perfect tournament, like in so many ways. But yeah, I had a lot of fun. I'm excited to do more. I think I'm going to make more time in my schedule to do these, to set, you know, like get reps, continue to grow. Continue to see what this Helga deck can do, especially with, you know, like new cards coming onto the scene, which hopefully I get something new for this deck with Aether Drift, which we will see at Chicago. And the story is now being told now. So we should be seeing cards within the next week, I would imagine. Spoilers, yeah, at the very least.
What gaps do you think need to be filled in Helga? What type of cards are you looking for to improve this deck?
You know, like I omitted Grand Abolisher Because like I've said in the past, I think if you're testing a deck, like there is no shame in cutting Grand Abolisher for your fun cards to see what lines of strategy you want to pursue. So, like there's a few cuts that are more efficiencies that I need to be making to like make the deck hum a little bit better. If, I cut Consphinx for a Mox Diamond. Like it's like still in my deck list, but like Consphinx never lives a turn cycle. It doesn't. And it comes down very late in the game. So I cut it for the opportunity to get Helga out a turn earlier or drop a Stax Beast on turn one or something like that. So I think that is definitely a cut that I made that I definitely do not regret. And then the big issue with Helga is running out of gas. You can cast a 4-mana or greater creature, get the trigger, draw a card, right? But there's a way higher chance of drawing a land or a creature that's not that, or a, you know, instant or sorcery or an enchantment.
Does that mean you mulligan down to one of your Rhystic Studies, Mystic Remora, Poliwag Prodigy type cards in hand?
Well, the thing was, I ended up cutting Prodigy too. So
really? Okay.
Yeah. It like, even though as I reflected on it over the course of the day, Poliwag Prodigy wouldn't have drawn me any cards.
Like, I don't know. I feel like that deck wants as much redundancy for the Rhystic type card slot as it can get, because adding in blue to this deck, like, you want blue for card draw and for interaction.
No, and you're absolutely
that's
right.
That's what blue's in the deck for, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because, like, the deck, that's what I noticed, is, like, more than anything, I need smooth, consistent card draw. And if people are reading Helga and they don't know what it does, they, like, that is not a benefit. They are often, like, I did not expect Helga to eat Talon Gates from an opponent. I didn't expect Helga to eat a Swords. I didn't expect Helga to be blasted off the table as frequently as it was. Like, but when I presented it or put it out on the table, people were like, oh, it's a combo. Like, it's a combo machine. So
yeah,
get rid of it, kill it, and the combo won't happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, no, I think you really just need to have as many cards in hand as possible when you drop Helga to be able to interact and protect your Helga and then go off with it. And that means having as many draw engines as possible in the deck. Like, I'm sure, are you playing Esper Sentinel?
Yep. Yeah, of course. Yep.
Okay, yeah. I mean, as much redundancy with draw engines as you can get. And then, because that means, too, when you mulligan, you don't have to mulligan down to 4 or 5 as often, right? More with the redundancy, there's more capable 5 or 6 card hands.
Yeah, there's more potential to see those engines rather than, you know, trying to like fall into a quick start. You know, like you can have your quick start on turn 2 or 3 as long as you drop, you know, like a Rhystic Fish, or, you know, if the Prodigy ends up, you know, proving that it can, you know, or like if I can find a slot for it, right? That I can get that card draw engine really rolling, then yeah, the deck I think functions. That's where, like, that's why I cut Consphinx. I'm like, it's just too high on the curve, and yeah, like I need something lower.
Yeah, I mean, you want 4 CMC or more creatures, but at the same time, that means pretty much mostly 4 CMC creatures, maybe a couple 5 CMC, 6 if it wins you the game.
Yeah, like Hullbreaker Horror is here because there are lines that allow me to win the game, and then my outlet, like Null Drifter, is here because it is technically 3 mana that gives me a 4 mana or greater trigger, right? And then Ulamog the Defiler is there because it's a win condition. So yeah, it's, you know, you bounce it after you generate infinite mana, you draw your library, you just bounce it up and down with Hullbreaker Horror and then exile everybody's libraries. It's
yeah, because the other thing too, like if you're drawing more cards, you need a lesser variety of win cons, because you're drawing into the win cons that you have more often.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, the deck definitely needs to see a few changes, and I'm excited to make those changes. One thing I will say is that Colossal Sky Turtle might be a card of the week in the future.
Okay. Love it.
It was incredibly impressive throughout the course of the day. everybody was playing it. If you were in the colors, they were playing it, and I saw it win games, and I also saw it save their games by using the, you know, like return target card from your graveyard to your hand ability. You know, like the fact it has two channel abilities, insane. That's insane.
Yeah, channel is an extremely strong ability, and then having two options, like, yeah, takes it off.
Yep. Yeah, pushes it through the ceiling. But yeah, this has been the Mock Stars podcast. Thank you all for listening. I know this episode went a little long, but hopefully you stuck through. You enjoyed it. We'll record or if you stick around to after this, I'll be doing the giveaway. And thank you all for supporting the show. Yeah, you can find us on YouTube. Make sure you like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. You can also support us on Patreon. Be a Pepper.
And we have tokens.
Dr. Pepper.
Have you mentioned tokens yet?
No, I haven't mentioned them. I always forget. We have sick, sick tokens. They're on screen now. They are super cool, made by Death Milk Designs. And everybody who was at the tournament who got to see them, they're the sexiest things ever, right? They're so cool. And even Justin thinks they're so cool. He's taking them to Ohio with him. He bought an extra set off me. Before he took off, yeah. But yeah, you can support us on Patreon by becoming an official Pepperhead. Be a Pepper. For $3 a month. You can also support us by becoming a Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead, like maybe Anthony, KB. You can also support us by becoming a Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead, like maybe Anthony, KB, Mono Greg, Draw for Turn, Jacob Hibbard, Tommy Cypher, D-Mun 82, K Mr. K, Will Rule, and UWP Quirt. Thank you all for your support. We really appreciate it. The show would not be the same without you. You can also support us on all major podcasting platforms. Find us there. Leave us a 5-star review. Leave a comment. Let us know what you think about the episodes. All engagement, all feedback. We love it. It feeds.
Oh, yeah. Let us know what movie. Let us know if Don Cheadle's in Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah.
Please.
Still confused about that. I'm not
trying to figure that out.
Yep. Yeah. Feeds the algae rhythm. Feeds the Don Cheadle's precious, precious nutrients. And always drink at least one Dr. Pepper a day. Not medical advice, just...
Well, if you want medical advice, it's drink two Dr. Peppers a day because it's a limitless pill.
Yeah, and the Dr. Pepper, he's a doctor. So, clearly, it's good for you.
He's not some Joe Schmo off the street like Mr. Pibb.
Yeah.
Would you take medical advice from Mr. Pibb?
No, because he's not a doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all the point that needs to be made. All right. This has been the Mock Stars podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you later. Peace.
Bye.
All right. You made it to the end of the show, which means you're here for this week's bi-weekly giveaway. And this week we're giving away a proxied CEDH deck with new sleeves, new deck box, and a set of Mock Stars tokens. It is Hellgush, Skittish Seer, the deck we've been hyping up so much lately. It's definitely a unique build of its own. Definitely makes use of Helga's ability to the max. Requires a little bit of a patient playstyle, but it is the Rocky Balboa of CDH decks. If it survives, it will come back and it will win. So as you can see here, we've got our new Patreon structure. We have our new decluttered picker wheel. So if you don't see your name up there and you should be up there, let me know. But everything should be good to go. Let's give it a shuffle. 1, 2, 3, and a spin. Who's going to get it? 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 Ooh. It's Pool Boy Barry! Congratulations, Pool Boy Barry, on the new CDH deck headed your way soon. I'll be in touch so that we can get this in your hands as soon as possible. Thank you, everyone, for participating and supporting the show. And, you know, if you want to add your name to this wheel, you can support us on Patreon. Sign up for that Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead tier or anything above it, the 2-liter tier, the You can also join the Mock Stars Dr. Pepper Lounge tier alongside Revenlift. We also still have the ridiculous Surgeon Master General tier for $2,300 a month. So whatever you want to do, it's up to you. So thank you all for supporting the show, and we'll see you next time. Peace.